We're doing Megillah, we're up to Chavvav Amad Aleph, and in the Mishnah we learned the concept that when you sell something that has holiness, you're required to use the money to purchase something that has more holiness. You can't take the holiness down, you have to move the holiness up. We then had a quote in the name of Rabbi Yonasan that the law that says that when you sell a shul, so that has one level of holiness, you buy the ark that actually houses the Sefer Torah, that has a higher level of holiness, that is only with regard to a shul of a village where it has steady participants. We saw the different understandings in Tosfos, but a shul of a big city where the participants are from all over, there you can't sell it. Ravashi commented that in Matamachsia he's the chief rabbi and any donations are with the understanding that he's going to call the shots as to what will be with the shul, and therefore, even though it's a big city, he could sell the shul. We then questioned, Rabbi Yehuda says that there was a shul of the coppersmiths in Jerusalem that they could sell it. Now, Jerusalem is a big city. So we said, yeah, but there only the coppersmiths were members, so that was okay. It was a small shul. Then we asked another question. We said, Jerusalem cannot have a blemish of tzaras. A house in Jerusalem cannot have a tzaras. Rav Yehuda says only the temple can't have tzaras. So we said, we understand from that the temple is the public domain, but the shuls are not public domain. They're owned by a bunch of individuals. So that's why Rav Yehuda holds they could have a nega tzaras. We answered, no, Rav Yehuda meant any holy place. He didn't mean specifically the temple, he meant any holy place. And that's where we left off. B'maika miflegi. What is the disagreement between Tanakama in the Braisa that says that throughout Jerusalem you cannot have a nega tzaras, because in order for there to be a nega tzaras in a home, there has to be private ownership of the home? And Rabbi Yehuda that holds that only the holy places cannot have a nega tzaras, but the rest of Jerusalem can have a nega tzaras. B'mai kamiflegi. Directly across from Tosfos Af. The last Tosfos, you see where it says Af, go into the line. B'mai. B'mai kamiflegi. What are they arguing about? Tana kama saval. The first Tana is of the opinion, lo nitchalka Yerushalayim lishvatim. Jerusalem was not divided among the tribes. Jerusalem was publicly owned. It was owned by all the tribes together. And therefore, even though you have a house you live in, but technically all of the properties belong to all of Israel at large. And therefore, you can't have a nega tzaras on public property. So the Torah says, Beveis Eretz Achuz Eschem, in a house of something that's your inheritance, your lot. Well, Jerusalem is not yours. Jerusalem is all of Israel's. The Rabbi Yehuda saval, but Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that nitchalka Yerushalayim lishvatim. Jerusalem was divided among the tribes. Uveflugta dehanetanai, and this disagreement of Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda's is in line with another machlokes Tanoim, where we have another brisa where it's more overt, this machlokes about whether Jerusalem was divided among the tribes or not. Yes.
Tanakam, the argument we're saying in reference to that Yerushalayim is not separated to tribes. But that's still, how is it proving that there is no concept of Rashut HaYachid on individual level? I mean, what's the difference if there is no distinction between from tribe to tribe?
Then it means that Jerusalem, all of Jerusalem, is owned by the public.
But then there's still individual.
Well, how does one get the right to live in a specific house or apartment? That's a good question. Let's wait and see.
If we say that Jerusalem was not divided, do we say that when they conquered the land of Israel, they already knew not to divide it? Or do we say that they did divide it, and then afterwards when Jerusalem became holy, it was undivided?
That's a good question. That's an excellent question. Wow, man's on the ball. That's an excellent question. There is a Rashi that discusses that, not here, elsewhere. This machlokas shows up in a few places in Shas. Boy, that's a really good question. Let's assume for now that when King David went to buy Jerusalem, so he took the funds from each of the tribes, and then it was agreed upon it would be all of theirs. The truth is that I'm slightly oversimplifying it, because this is a discussion, meaning, okay, you're dragging me into a whole different discussion about the agreements that the tribes made when they entered Israel. Meaning there was a discussion, and the question is, what was their agreement? We find this discussion with regard to Jericho, that they said whichever tribe will have Jericho in its lot, whichever tribe will have the temple in its lot, will receive all the bounty of Jericho. So the Talmud discusses, well, was there one tribe that had it, or all the tribes had it? This only works with the opinion that says one tribe had it. But we see that there was already a discussion at the time that they entered the land of Israel, which tribe would have the temple in their lot. But that's a good question. Okay, I don't know if we'll get back to this question, but stick around and we'll get to that Rashi discussion. Not in this tractate. I don't remember if it's in Yuma or if it's in Soto or if it's in Shavuos. I don't remember. I have to look. The sugya shows up in a few places. I have to look. Let's read. The Gemara is about to discuss it. Good point. So we said this argument about whether Jerusalem was divided among the tribes, or whether Jerusalem was all of the tribes, everyone owned it together. This argument is really another machlokes tanoim. Titanya, for we have the following braisa. Ma haya bechelko shel Yehuda. The braisa says, what was in the portion of the tribe of Yehuda? Harabait, the Temple Mount, the eastern side of the Temple Mount, meaning when you climb up and you're ascent to the Temple Mount from the east, so that part was in Judean territory. Halishachot, when you'd enter, so then you had all the different rooms. Ve'ha'azarot, and the courtyards of the women, the courtyard of Israel. So that's called Ezras Yisrael, and then Ezras Kohanim, the 11 Amma where only Kohanim would go. So all that was in the tribe of Yehuda's territory. Umayav echelko shel Binyamin, and which part of the temple landed in Benjamin territory? Ulam veichal uvet kodeshei hakodeshim, all the holy. The Holy of Holies, the Holy, everywhere from the altar inward. As you get more holy from the Mizbeach inward, the Ulam, the Heichal, all of that, that was in Binyamin's portion. And you had a strip of property that Judean rule extended into, v'nichneset b'chelko shel Binyamin, and it entered the tribe of Benjamin's portion, uva mizbeach banui, and the mizbeach was actually built on a piece of property that belonged to Yehuda. So this strip, which really only extended to the northern part of the mizbeach, meaning the majority of the mizbeach was really in Benjamin territory, but there was only a tiny area of the mizbeach where Judean territory entered into Binyamin territory, you know, like the boundary went with a loop inward, and there you had part of the mizbeach was built. V'aya Binyamin HaTzadik, and Binyamin the Tzadik, you know, Binyamin was one of the people who never did a sin that was big enough to deserve dying for. No one's perfect, but Binyamin is Binyamin the Tzadik. He lived an almost perfect life. His life was close enough to being perfect that the only reason he died was because God decreed that people should die in this world. He didn't deserve it on his own. So Binyamin the Tzadik, he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that this is the way it would be, that he'd have the Holy of Holies, the Holy, and much of the Mizbeach, but not all of the Mizbeach. And when he saw that, he would be mitzta'er ala b'chol yom. Every day he'd be in sorrow that he doesn't have that. Levola, that if only he could grab the whole Mizbeach into his territory. Shenemar, as the verse says, chofef alav kol hayom. Okay. Meaning, only part of the Mizbeach was in Binyamin territory. The Mizbeach was situated so that there was one corner of the Mizbeach which was in the portion of Yehuda. The Mizbeach was on the border. So part of the Mizbeach was in Benjamin territory and part of the Mizbeach was in Yehuda territory.
I know
what you understood, but learn Rashi and learn Tosis and you'll see that that's not pshat. It's not. I agree with you that the simple reading of the Gemara is like you're saying. But you'll see Rashi, who explains it one way, and you'll see Tosis, who explains it another way, and they're both coming off of Gemara and Zvachim, and then you'll see that even though the words say that, but that's not pshat here.
What is Binyamin HaTzadik? What is his draw to have the Mizbeach on in the territory of Binyamin?
It's a good question. Why can't he share, right?
I figure it's Klal Yisrael. Everyone has something. Why do you want those? What is it? Such a personal thing?
Let me ask you a different question. Why do you think Binyamin didn't merit to have the whole Mizbeach in his territory? Meaning, if God's giving him all the holy and holy of holies, and he's got so much, but there's this one drop that's not there. Why?
Maybe because you didn't merit it.
Maybe. So obviously, this needs more work. Lefichach zacha Binyamin. V'nasa ushpizcha nashchina. Therefore, Binyamin merited, and he was the host of the Shekhinah, the Aron was in his portion, being that he wanted it so badly. V'hai Tana Saval, lo nitchalka l'Yerushalayim nishvatim. So this Tana, the first braisa we quoted, is obviously telling me Yehuda owns this part of the Jerusalem, Binyamin owns that part of Jerusalem. So here you have a braisa that's clearly telling you that Jerusalem was divided among the tribes, right? That's clear.
What? About the Mikdash.
Right, but from that we understand.
That there was.
Your point is a very good point. If we wanted to, we could suggest that maybe this is in line with the Rambam. There's a discussion, what's called Jerusalem? With regard to the mitzvah of shaking lulav. Right? The Oraisa. So what's called Harabais, what's called Yerushalayim. So maybe this would go in line with the Rambam's opinion there. Maybe.
So
in order to... what does Rashi say? When you'd enter from the east, all open territory we call Harabayis because it has no other name. The question is, what does Rashi mean by that? Okay, so right, there's a lot here that needs definition. Back to the Gemara. So this Braisa goes in line with the opinion that says that Jerusalem was divided among the tribe. That would be the opinion of who? Rabbi Yehuda. And the other opinion... And the other opinion holds that Yerushalayim was not divided among the tribes. What's the source for that? Titania, we have the following braisa. En maskirin batim b'Yerushalayim mipenei she'inan shelahin. You don't rent out homes in Jerusalem. If people are coming, they're all regel. And they need a place to stay, you can't charge them rent because you don't really own the house you're living in. Rabbi Eliezer Omer af lo mitot. You can't even charge rent for the beds they're sleeping in. Lefichach, therefore, being that you have to host and you can't charge anything for it, so they made an institution. That there would be some kind of compensation for the host. Orot Kodashim, the hides of the sacrifices, of the Todah sacrifices, the Shlomim sacrifices. So the animal's brought, the animal is eaten, and you eat that up by the base of Mikdash. But what about the hides? So the hides, they belong to the owner. He takes them back home. But those hides, Chazal made an institution that Ushpizin Nutlinotan Bizoa, the host, takes it, and if you don't want to give it, he pulls out his gun and says, hand it over. Bizoa. He has a right to it, and he could grab it and say, no, you don't. You've been sleeping in my house, in my bed. You give me that hide. Bizra means with strength, with force. You have no right to hold on to it. Chazal made an institution that you can't just take advantage of your host, sleep there, eat there, use his home, use his bed, and then say, look, buddy, we're all partners here. This is Jerusalem. We're all owners here. You don't really own this house. Chazal said, very nice, but you got to give him something for it. So the hides, you got to give him. Yeah.
In regards to the hides, my personal opinion is very much about the
We said Toda and Shlomin. Other Korbanos, so it went to the Kohanim. Toda and Shlomin, they went to the owner. Okay, so here we saw Machlokas Tanoim. Was Yerushalayim divided among the tribes or not? Amar Abaye Shmamina. From this Braisa, we can infer, we can understand Orachara, Derech Eretz. Proper etiquette. Lemishbak inish gulfa umishcha beushpize. That when a person finishes drinking his Coke bottle, so the Coke bottle is made of earthenware back then. Back then, Coca-Cola used to produce an earthenware bottles. And if he slaughtered an animal and he has hides left, so there hertz is you leave it beushpize, you leave it for the host. Meaning there are small things which you can forgo, and you leave it for the host. So if you open a plastic Coke bottle, chances are your host doesn't want you to leave it there. Don't leave him your garbage, right? But if, let's say, you bought those cookies in the tins, right? So those tins are very useful. Maybe they could use it for crayons or, I don't know, you know, some people use them, some people don't. You know what I'm talking about? They have those metal tins. Danish cookies, right. So there are all kinds of things which you buy where the byproducts, you have byproducts that you can use. So a person gets a new shirt, right? So they have all those pins that come inside. Maybe you should collect them, put them in a box, and offer them to your host. If they ever need to pin up someone's pants, they'll have those pins. There are things that we get today also that for some people are of value. You know, sometimes if you buy flowers, they give you a vase for free. So leave the vase for your host. I'm talking about expensive flowers, yeah. I'm saying there are times that you get byproducts. I know I have a vase in my house that's just that. The vase that we use most of the time when we have a big bouquet of flowers was someone came, they were a guest by us, and someone sent my guest flowers. They sent it for the guest. Someone from Chutz Lartz wanted, it was a family simcha, so they sent them flowers. So they left me the vase. No, that's this, right? You're going to be a guest in someone's house. Leave them that. Why not? So how much does a vase cost? 15 shekels. It's not a big expense. But at the end of the day, why not? Oh. You got to make sure it's not a nuisance, you know. I'm a rabbi. Okay, so now that we've gone off on this tangent, now that we finished the tangent, we come back to the point at hand. We said that when you sell a shul, so the holiness remains in the money. And Rashi says, not only does the money remain holy, but the shul also remains holy. Because it's just like selling a Sefer Torah. Just because the Sefer Torah isn't in your possession doesn't mean it's not holy. So, Amar Rava. Rava says, commenting on all of this that we just read, Lo shanu Ela shelo macheru shivatu be'ya'ir b'ma'amad anshei ya'ir. All of these limitations only apply when you don't have the board. Shivatu be'ya'ir. The seven people who they're considered the good men of society. They're considered the board of society. If they do the sale, if you have the board, together with Ma'amad and She'ir, everyone's standing there and everyone's witnessing and approving. So then if you sell a shul, Aval Macheru Shivatu Ve'ya'ir, if the seven good men of society, meaning the seven leaders that the nation appointed, that the town appointed as the board, if they sold B'ma'amad anshei ha'ir, when everyone was present and approving, so then the money no longer has holiness, the shul no longer has holiness, and you could do whatever you want with it. Afilu lemishta beishicha. You could even make it into a bar. You hear? You want to know what's the lowest place? What's an example of the lowest place? A bar. That's what it says. Afilu lemishta beishicha. Shapir damin. Huh?
I'm saying historically, when increased all the bad Knesset, Germans would have to make them into barns.
Barn or bar?
Bar.
Bar. Well, I guess it makes sense. A shul elevates you from the physical to the spiritual. And a bar puts you down from the spiritual to the most physical, right? What are you doing when you get a bar? You're not getting any spiritual heights, you know? I guess there's one worse thing than a bar. Okay. But that you can't do anywhere. So you can't say that. A bar is technically within the confines of halacha. It's just not the kadoshim to you. Okay. Okay. The next story with Ravina and Rav Ashi. Okay, we'll do you. We'll go a minute over time. Ravina havale yahu tila debe kenishta. Ravina had a broken down shul. Tila de Bekenishta. It was the ruins of a shul. Atal kamed Ravashi. So he came before Ravashi and asked him, Amale maule mizraha. What's halacha? Can I plant it? You see, Ravina asks Ravashi questions. Throughout the Shas, we see this relationship. Ravina is like a disciple of Ravashi's. Very often people will say, Ravina and Ravashi wrote the Talmud. Well, it was Ravashi and his disciples, and Ravina was like a disciple to Ravashi. Ravina asked Ravashi, can I plant it? Now that I have this ruined shul, can I turn it into a garden? Amale, so Ravashi said to him, here's how you do it. Zilzav ne mishivatu ve'ir b'mamad anshe'ir v'zara. Go, buy it from the seven board members, the seven tuvei ha'ir, in the presence of the people of the city, and then go ahead and plant it. So, from this story, Rashi understands that when you sell a shul, not only the money retains its holiness, which is the halacha that it says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, you sell a shul, you have to use the money for something holier. So from the Mishnah, I learned the concept that the holiness takes hold of the money. But who said that the shul remains holy? Rashi says, from this story I understand that it's not only the money that gets the holiness, but the building or that location retains its holiness as well. And that's why you need Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. Technically, this is a concept we didn't see until now, that even though the building was sold, it retains its holiness. But now Rashi says, from this story, I see that's question. True as well. Yes?
So the question is, is it our question originally as I had understood it, is that after he sold it, that was the question, does it still retain its holiness or not? Here, do we have an indication that this was sold? Similarly, it's referring to it being ruined.
Right. The question is, what happened here? What does it mean he had it, right? That's a little bit unclear here. It says he had this ruin of a shul. What does it mean he had it? It was rabbi there. Right.
Is it a transaction that transfers the holiness?
It seems like there wasn't a transaction, because otherwise why would he have to rebuy it? I don't know. I don't know. Later. Okay. We'll pause here for tonight.